Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Gianni.
Hey Gianni, this is Press.
And look, Press, with 16 days to go until the next FPL deadline, we've got a mini rest now, unless of course you've hit that wildcard button. But before we talk about game week 30, let's look back at 29. How was your week, Press?
Oh man, what a time to come back on the podcast. You know, I was, I'm still doing very well. I was like 3.5K going into game week 29. My team looked great. And I going on a Saturday night, I was actually on a green arrow. And then obviously Sunday comes around. I don't have Fulham defense. I only have one Arsenal defender. And of course, I don't have my beloved Bruno Fernandes. And so now I end up with 37 points and up to 7K, or down to 7K, I should say, from where I was. Still very happy with the season, with the rank. But yeah, not having Bruno was painful. How was yours?
Oh, yeah, it's great to see you having such a good season though, mate. Like, good FPL play from you to be at that sort of rank. I've had the opposite. I've had a terrible season. But I look back at maybe, I don't know, a month or 6 weeks ago, I was at like 1.3 million in the world. I'm now at around 500K. So I've had green arrow after green arrow. I've been playing really risky, loose FPL, betting against Salah with captain. I've really enjoyed it, betting against Salah with captain. I've not owned an Arsenal defender since game week 20. I've just been having loads of fun with it and going quite rogue, but it's seen the green arrows. I've also committed to a very different chip strategy consciously, because I want to bet against the template. So I've booked in a wild card for the blank of 34. I committed to free hit 29 about 6 weeks ago. And I've been buying Crystal Palace and Newcastle players knowing no one else could because they were blanking. So it's been fun. And my free hit in 29 was all right. It never felt like a massive upside free hit week. And, you know, clean sheets were hard to predict. But fortunately, the likes of Bruno and Marmoush came in big for me. I captained Haaland. So 68 points, I'm happy with. Even had a United defender keep a clean sheet. So it was just one of those weeks, which was nice to see. But I guess we got to start off with the EFL Cup final, just with a nod to Newcastle, because Newcastle are going to become hot property again in FPL, aren't they? Because they've got a double game week in 32. And we're all going to want a piece of that.
And it's a nice double as well, home to Man United, home to Crystal Palace. And man, that that performance was fantastic. Like, they completely deserved winning the final. Of course, this the first one since 1969. So amazing for Newcastle fans. And you know what the neat thing about their path to the final was? They actually ended up beating all the current top four teams in the Premier League. So they obviously beat Forest in the first or the second round. They beat Chelsea, then they beat Arsenal, and they beat Liverpool. So really well done to them. Great game. I'm sure you enjoyed it with your friend Ed as well at the stadium.
Yeah, it was great to see that. I'm so happy for the Newcastle fans. They deserve it. And I'm happy for some of the quality players in that 11. I look at the likes of Isak and Bruno Guimarães and Tonali, and they all must know they can play at the very, very top level. They should be competing for league titles. And instead, they're playing for a team that's sort of in and around the fringes of Champions League qualification each season. So I'm glad they've got a trophy. But watching the likes of Isak, I mean, you mentioned the run to the final. I look back to only a few weeks back, that semi-final against Arsenal over two legs. Isak bullied Gabriel and Saliba. And I just look at Isak and go, you never see the Arsenal defence that worried. But against Isak, they were. And again, Isak scoring in the final with up against Van Dijk. And Isak, again, has been sold en masse. And I understand why so many had to sell him, because he didn't have a fixture. But I've got no doubt, by game week 31, when a lot of, or even 30, when there's a lot of wild cards in action, Isak's going to be front of mind for so many, isn't he?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when you have Leicester in 31 and then you follow that up with a double, I definitely think Isak will be in. And I think it's a question of who else, right? I mean, Dan Burn had this incredible story of his dad being a Newcastle fan and writing this letter to him in the previous final, not this one. But, you know, him scoring the goal that won the game, I think he'll be popular. He's quite cheap when people look at him, because, you know, Lewis Hall is injured and you don't really have a lot of options. Somebody like Trippier is tempting, but he's so expensive. So it comes down to, if you want Newcastle defense, then Dan Burn would be popular. And then remember that Gordon is also suspended for the Brentford game, but from game week 31, he's back as well. So lots of options from Newcastle.
Yeah. I bought Dan Burn in game week 28. I had Lewis Hall, and I again was buying Newcastle and Palace players for the reasons I just mentioned. And Dan Burn was so cheap. And I was listening to the game on the radio, the Monday night football, West Ham Newcastle, thinking, come on, Dan Burn, keep that clean sheet. And with 10 minutes to go, as always, I was checking the live bonus point score. And Dan Burn was on for 2 bonus points. But then he went and got a yellow card, which means he dropped out the bonus. So he went from 8 to 5 points. And Gabriel did exactly the same at the weekend as well. The yellow card cards in the BPS can really count against you. But regardless, you want centre-backs that pick up bonus, and the likes of Gabriel and Dan Burn pick up so many tackles, interceptions, blocks. Yeah, just very good picks. See, I've got no doubt there'll be a lot on the Newcastle double, if not triple up. Absolutely. Anthony Gordon might come back into the conversation. Didn't you and I start the season with Gordon and Isak, didn't we? I wonder if we'll be there for 32.
I had the triple up. I had Hall, Gordon and Isak. We had it right at the beginning.
Yeah.
So it was, I mean, they had home to Southampton in game week one. I think a lot of people knew that this is the team to target. But yeah, I think it's a team that people will have, because not only do they have that double, they play Leicester just before, and they play Ipswich in game week 34 as well. So a lot of interest in Newcastle, I think. But word on Liverpool, I mean, a little bit toothless. I think it was a little overblown where people said, you know, what slot didn't rotate against Southampton? They looked a bit leggy, but I feel it's a bit disrespectful to Newcastle. I mean, Newcastle were great, but what did you make of Liverpool in general?
I've never liked zonal marking from set pieces, and I just think that's the perfect example of why zonal marking can really work against you, because you can see a mismatch of McAllister versus Dan Burn, and that doesn't happen with man-to-man marking. But Newcastle had just turned it on, and Liverpool were perhaps a little bit just complacent, and maybe there was a touch of complacency or even arrogance in that Liverpool performance, that their big players would get them out of a mess. But it's the first time, I think, in a Liverpool shirt we've seen Mo Salah not have a shot or create a chance. So his XGI, his expected goal involvement, was 0.00 for, I think, the first time ever in a Liverpool shirt. I mean, I still keep calm and carry on, though, in terms of FPL and Liverpool, I think, isn't it? Like, the league's pretty much won. They've got no Champions League to worry about. Salah's going to play every minute and still be an amazing pick. I do think it will just be Salah for me, maybe a defender at some point. But obviously with the Trent injury, with rotation up front, I think Salah enough is probably it for me. And maybe when Bradley's fit, if Trent is out for longer, he could become an option. I'm not sure. I mean, what's your take there with Liverpool in general?
No, I'm in agreement. I think having no other competition to distract them maybe is actually a good thing, because if they had Champions League, they're so far ahead in the league that they might have started to rotate in the league. Now, when they have nothing to play for, Mo Salah isn't accepting an answer like, you know, you're on the bench today. So, yeah, I think it's good for Salah's minutes. And I also agree with you that there is really no other pick that you want, because if you're so that far ahead, you know, clean sheets become a little bit harder to predict. If there's a hidden gem like a Kwanzaa or a Bradley that is so cheap and Trent is out for longer, we hope not. But if that is the case, then there are some options. But I think as a Liverpool team, I think it's a case of they know that the season is almost, you know, it's a little bit odd to say, because they're going to be winning the league most likely. And so it's not right to say that the season is fizzling out, but in some sense it is, right? Because heading into this a week ago, they were on for a treble. They had the second leg with PSG where they were ahead. They had the Carabao Cup where they were favorites. And so now they're, you know, they're thinking, okay, we've got a couple of months to go. Let's just see out some results and win the league and then just, you know, go on our holidays.
Yeah, it's going to be super interesting to see how often we captain Mo Salah in the next month or so, because Liverpool don't have any double game weeks forecast, and there's lots of other teams that do. So when it's Salah versus the double game weeker, we'll be often backing against him. But then there's also good fixtures for Haaland at times and Isak at times against Salah as well, where they have standout fixtures. So it's going to be an interesting debate. And I think captaincy will become much more of a conversation for the run-in. We've been at parts of the season where it's just set and forget. At the start, Captain Haaland. Then it was set and forget, Captain Salah. I feel like we're going to have real fun with captaincy, which is always fun to talk about. But let's move on to Man City, because the other part of that captaincy question is often Haaland. And again, like Liverpool, no Champions League distraction. And I said last week, I'm really big on Man City now for the run-in. They're going to have a full week on the training ground. They're going to turn a corner. We're going to see an impact of 4 weeks training, no Champions League distraction. And sure, they went and scored a couple of first half goals against Brighton. But when you take a look at the data from that game, and when you watch the highlights or watch the game, Brighton gave as good as they got. If anything, Brighton edged it. City still look really vulnerable and certainly haven't turned that corner yet, have they?
I just don't know if it's a signing, if Rodri's that good, you know, like, it's just a combination of maybe the team is not gelling and they're trying to find a way, right? I mean, in this latest setup, there is Doku and Savio basically trying to do the old, you know, back in the day when they used to have Sané and Sterling. I think they're trying to go back to that kind of setup where, you know, they have threat from the wings and then, you know, there's spaces for the central midfielders that opens up. So it helps people like Marmoush or Foden if they play centrally. So They're trying things, but the vulnerability at the back just makes it so difficult. But actually, you know what? Credit to Brighton, because they have been on a superb run since that Nottingham Forest defeat. And this was a game where they had a higher XG created than Man City, which isn't easy when you're away to the champions. And, you know, it's just as much of a great Brighton performance as a not so great City performance, I thought.
Yeah, and it was Marmoush that I guess got the headlines for Man City. And I think going into game week 30, we see Man City versus Leicester at home, a captainable fixture for a City attacker. For those that haven't made the move yet or that are on wildcard, do you rip up your team and get a Haaland in? Well, maybe it'll be easy to if, let's say, Cole Palmer is injured. We don't know about his availability for 30 yet. But some will look at it and go, Marmoush is half the price and their points are very similar. Now, since Marmoush came into the team, there's been seven Premier League games. I think he started six of the seven since he's been available. When he only signed days before that Chelsea game and he was straight in the 11. Like, Pep doesn't do this with forwards much. He usually eases them in, other than Erling Haaland, who came straight into the 11. But Marmoush has come straight into the 11, more often than not starting six and seven, always hooked around 71 to 76, got 85 at the weekend. Good sign. But the numbers are pretty similar to Haaland. Like, they've both had four goals in that time. Haaland obviously edges the XG. The minutes per goal, Marmoush 119 minutes, Haaland 133. But I thought it was interesting. They both had 14 goal attempts, but 12 of those 14 were in the box for Haaland and only four in the box for Marmoush. But Marmoush is showing us, even from range, he's an elite finisher, isn't he?
I mean, he's a great pick. But I sort of still think that it's... if you want to go for Marmoush, you go Haaland plus Marmoush, not Marmoush instead. Because, I mean, a difference of three times the number of shots in the box and XG difference of almost three times for Haaland basically says that Haaland is getting the easier chances. Marmoush is getting the harder chances. Now, can you predict Marmoush scoring worldies out of the box all the time? It's difficult. And then when you also add to the fact that Haaland is on penalties, which he did basically convert one this weekend, and the fact that his minutes look more secure. Because ultimately, if Doku and Savio keep playing, then there's only spot for maximum two off, if not one off, Foden, Marmoush or De Bruyne. And so if that's the case, then you don't want to be playing around with it, especially when a fixture like Leicester is a midweek fixture. Remember, game week 30 is a midweek game. They play Bournemouth in the FA Cup on a Sunday, then they play Leicester, and then they have the Man United game. So you just never know. Are you playing around with minutes and if that backfires? So captaincy becomes an issue as well.
Yeah, good point. And you're right about you mentioned earlier, the wingers of Doku and Savio. They've started the last handful of games each. Doku's impact on Guardiola hasn't been great, I've noticed. Like, we've seen Guardiola earlier in the season galloping forward on the left-hand side. And often if you've got, say, a Grealish or a Foden or someone that's going to cut inside a lot, Guardiola's got all that space. But Doku hugs the touchline, which means Guardiola sits back. And then the right back often inverts, whether that's been Mateus Nunes or Rico Lewis at the weekend. And at times in possession, it looks like back three at City, and Guardiola is the left centre back. So again, difficult for owners there, because you should be getting forecast clean sheets, but the way they're defending, perhaps you're not getting them. And then now you're not getting that shot volume or that goal threat from Guardiola that you were early in the season.
Yeah, it's the fifth successive game in a row where Guardiola hasn't had a shot on goal, where from earlier part of the season, we remember him as almost like the second best City attacker. Like, he was at the end of so many chances. But you know what? With Guardiola, it's one of those things where if Pep again decides, all right, you know what? I'm not going to play Doku, like you said. I'm going to play someone else, maybe Foden off the left, where he's actually not hugging the touchline. And then suddenly, you know, Guardiola becomes... you know, the go-to defender. I think he will be very popular on wildcards. A lot of people will be going for him simply because, you know what, they have great fixtures starting with Leicester. They might have a double game week coming as well if they go progress in the FA Cup. So I feel like he will be the go-to defender, especially when, you know, Trent may not make a lot of teams as well.
Yeah, and shout out that Brighton attack, because to go to the Etihad and out XG Man City, fair play. They're a well-functioning attack. We're looking at teams like Bournemouth and Brentford and Brighton, all fancying their chances for European football next season. So much to play for. And that team's with well-functioning attacks that I'm really interested in with FPL assets for the run-in. Brighton, yeah. Bournemouth and Brentford, the three Bs there. But I look at Minter, Matoma, Jorginho Rutter and João Pedro. That front four feels relatively well set. Welbeck on the bench at the moment. João Pedro looks great up front, had a good game against City. Jorginho Rutter looks like a brilliant player, maybe not the best FPL pick from what we've seen so far. Matoma and Minter on the wings are brilliant. Minter is so cheap, he's 5 million. Yeah. And I just wonder, he's had a couple of big hauls this season. Back in game week 22, he got a 12-pointer. In 25, he got a 15-pointer. I just wonder for the run-in, Brighton's fixtures are good. If you need an enabler in midfield, he could become a really good sort of 5 million option. Remember, Brighton could also get a double game week in 33. They've got Leicester in 32 at home. Quite like Brighton. I've got my eye on them for sure.
Yeah, a bit like, so I think in the three Bs that you mentioned, I think people have, there's a little bit of a preference, not because of the teams being better, but because the goals being concentrated to certain players. So if I talk about Brentford, Wissa and Mbeumo, basically they hog all the chances, they hog all the goal chances and they score between them a lot of goals. When you talk about Bournemouth, I think they spread it out a lot more, but then you can still concentrate a little bit on Kluivert, Evanilson, it used to be Dango Ouattara, and maybe Semenyo. But I think with Brighton, like you said, there's just so many picks that it's very hard to predict who's going to get the points. So João Pedro has been popular because he's also cheap. He's on penalties. He's actually got a couple of penalties in the last three games. With Minte, it's like it's a little bit of a guesswork on whether he's involved in those chances. And we're spoiled this season with 5 million options, you know. From beginning of the season, we had the Fulham guys. We had Morgan Rogers. Now, I think going forward as well, we'll have some Nottingham Forest picks, which we'll talk about. We'll talk about maybe Murphy. We didn't talk about him for Newcastle. So there's so many options, but I do like these three teams. We're actually blessed from a Premier League point of view that we have such great managers managing the teams that are not in the traditional top four, top six.
Yeah, yeah, so true. Like we can say about, oh, is the Premier League not quite the same this year? You know, the title's won and the best teams aren't really at it, your Arsenals and your Man Cities. But then you look at all the teams competing for those European spots and they're stronger than ever and they can go to a Man City and outplay. Yeah, let's talk about some of those other budget mids at Forest then, shall we? Because for those that are on free hit this week, a fair few punted for two Forest attackers. Everyone had Chris Wood on free hit. Yeah. And then some and I did, and I went just Wood. And it was between Gibbs White and Alanga for me on the bench, but I wasn't going to start them. And look, Alanga, huge, huge points. Two good finishes. He's the most advanced man on the pitch for Forest quite often. He's one of the quickest players in the league. They use him as an out and they play on the counter. He's perfect for the way they set up, isn't he? With sort of big man, little man, Wood at Alanga, almost like a front two at times.
It's changed a little bit. You know, he was basically taking up a lot of wide positions, but more recently he's taking up more of a central role with Gibbs White dropping in a little. And look, Alanga has not, he's an ex-Man United guy, so we've watched him very closely. Even with Forest, he's not been the best finisher. This is in fact his third goal of the season, well, second and third goals of the season. But, you know, they come at a time when people go for him on free hits and the role is changing. So I don't sort of, it's not lucky because it was there. It was an Ipswich game, which was going to be, you know, we talked about it in the past. How do Nottingham Forest play? They sit back, give the ball to the other team because Forest have the lowest possession in the league. And they basically say, you can have the ball. As soon as we win it back, you know, your Hudson-Odoi, Elanga are going to make runs out wide and Morgan Gibbs-White is going to find them. And they're both great at cutting in and shooting. And that's how a lot of these goals are created. So I think the blueprint for Nottingham Forest is clear. It's very hard to stop them. Elanga is a decent option. Depends if they double or not. There's a little bit of a problem with their scheduling where, you know, the popular week where a lot of teams will double game week 33, they have a Monday game. So it's very hard for them to double that week. So we'll see if their assets become popular. But yeah, Chris Wood, four games without a goal now. What's happening with him?
Oh, it's the first time I've owned Chris Wood all season. It's one of my biggest flaws this season. I've not owned Chris Wood. I pick him on free hit and of course he disappoints. But there's so many desirable forwards out there. I do think those on wildcard 30 or 31 will probably ignore Wood because Mateta's going to be available and got a great run. Isak, brilliant. Marmoush now becomes part of the conversation, as does Haaland. I don't know if there's necessarily going to be space for Wood, but owners can be, you know, they've done very well from him. And the ceiling always feels relatively low with Wood, but at the same time, when he scores, he often picks up the bonus points. It's rare Forrest go and score three or four goals. Mm-hmm. So a single 1-0 win for Wood often gets him 9 points, not six. So he's been brilliant. But yeah, maybe it's okay to release him on wildcard. And that Forest back line, they deserve so much respect. They've been brilliant and actually were really unfortunate to concede at the weekend 2 to Ipswich. Ipswich didn't have a single big chance in the game. Low XG throughout, but somehow scored two late goals, almost meaningless at the end. They were consolation goals. But that Forest back line, I still think Matt Sells could be the best goalkeeper for those even on wildcard.
I mean, it's the perfect recipe, right? If you concede under 0.1 XG chances, which is very, very low chances, then your keeper makes very, very easy saves and they just keep accumulating save points. I think Sells has been up there for save points. And when you're basically protected by a really solid back four, it's a good keeper for FPL. So I think he, even without a double game week, could be popular. A lot of people have been on him. I haven't owned Sells all season and it's been not great. And the other guy from their defense, Milenkovic, I think a lot of people called him for that attacking threat. A little bit like, you know, a Gabriel for their team. Of course, in the week that it matters, a lot of people go for him, scores a goal and an assist. And he is now the highest scoring defender with 4 goals this season. Who would have thought?
Wow. I did loads of research on Forest defenders for my free hit. And I went into the granular detail of how good are Ipswich at defending set pieces. And they ranked around mid-table. So it put me off Milenkovic. I thought, I was really hoping Ipswich were going to be a team I can go, yeah, I can target them on set pieces because they're the third worst in the league. They were mid-table for a lot of sort of the aerial duels. And I looked at Milenkovic and thought, oh, I can't see him scoring because Ipswich are quite useful at the back at set plays. I'm going to go for Matt Sells. So yeah, my 1 point from Sells versus the huge points from Milenkovic is disappointing. But you mentioned save points there. I think only Flecken and Ramsdale have made more saves than Matt Sells, right. Which considering Forrest is such a top defence, you're right, it's the low XG chances against him. Whilst Flecken and Ramsdale are constantly faced with big chances against them, as well as obviously the lower. So yeah, fair play to all those that have been on Forrest defence for so long. Let's move on to the Bruno show, shall we? Leicester are definitely a team we should target, I think, more than any other. Of course, Ipswich and Southampton are vulnerable, but Leicester at the moment feel like the team you can really chase. And obviously, they play Man City up next. But because of Leicester being so vulnerable, and they haven't scored since forever, I think it's game week 23, Man United defenders were a good punt. But for the ceiling, it's always one man, isn't it? It's Bruno. If you want big FPL points from a Man United player, he is Mr. Reliable.
I mean, he's just the talisman, right? I mean, what you want from a talisman is whenever there's a goal, you're either assisting or scoring. And he's basically doing that forever. So it's a classic case of people watching a team and saying, this team is not that great. Why should I pick an 8 million player for them? But he has everything. In certain games, he'll do nothing but get a penalty. Or another game, he doesn't get a penalty, but gets that free kick where he assists Maguire. Or he's actually involved in open play where basically he had that one shot. I can't remember another shot that he had from outside the box, puts it in. All the chances created were coming through him. Højlund finds his scoring boots. Garnacho finds his scoring boots. It's one of those weeks where everything worked out. And some people even captained Bruno. So it was an amazing shout. But it's Leicester. Leicester is a team to target. Like Leicester and Southampton are well below what we've been used to seeing in the Premier League. And, you know, it's a case of they've, you know, I would even go as far as saying that do they have it in them? Do they believe that they'll stay in the league? I don't think so. Like Leicester haven't scored since game week 23. It's difficult. And you know, we need to basically, we do already, but even more so look at targeting them for the run.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that Bruno performance, what do you make of his positioning, Praz? Because so often now we're seeing at United, he's starting the game in the midfield too. And as the game develops, whether it's forced through injuries or it becomes tactical, he is finishing a lot of games high up in that front three position. Now, when the game is won, Bruno is perfect. We've seen over the years, there's only one other player that scores that for me when I'm watching games, and this isn't backed up necessarily by the numbers, but it's Mo Salah and Bruno are the two bullies late in games. When the game is won, it's 2-0, you're coasting, but I'm still going to goal hang and I'm going to give 100%. I'm going to get more points and more goals because they're so obsessed with their own individual tallies. And Salah and Bruno do it so, so often. And we saw it again against Leicester for Man United. Game's won, everyone else eases off a little bit. Bruno's playing super high and he still gets another return.
Yeah, I mean,
that's what you want from an FPL asset, greedy.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And maybe I would also add Mbeumo in that category. You know, like guys who play 90 minutes, who have a lot of route to points, will get points because traditionally more goals are scored in the final third than any other time in football. So I agree with you. And the fact that when you watch the game, everybody's looking for him. So when you're looking for a player, he's either going to be crossing or basically being at the end of those shots. And I feel, yeah, he was a good pick. But I also want to talk to the guys like myself who didn't have him. I think it was okay if you were going for a Haaland captaincy and you thought, you know what, I don't need to have the Man United pick because if you're not on a free hit, then they play away to Forest. We've just talked about how good Forest defense is. So I think, you know, it's okay to miss out on certain hauls if it's for a week. sometimes, you know, things happen. 17 points is unpredictable. However, he did score 17 points as well when he was home to Leicester earlier in the season. So it is one of those things. I think, look, Bruno is a very, very good FPL pick for all the things that he does, often underrated. So as a Man United fan, I'm happy anyway when he does well.
Yeah, he hasn't got a Southampton, Ipswich or Leicester coming up. And it is a tough run. Do you think those on wildcard, I mean, they'll consider Bruno because one, he's brilliant, and two, he's just got a load of points. But the run isn't great. Like, if I'm on wildcard, Bruno's probably not part of my thinking. It's Forest, City, Newcastle, the next three. It's a tough run for United, and they haven't been scoring that many goals.
It's a little bit of a complex answer. So if people want to do some forward planning, basically if Bournemouth beat Man City in the FA Cup quarterfinal, then Bournemouth could very likely have a double. And who do Bournemouth play? It's Man United. So Man United could also have a double in that case. So yes, there is a chance Bruno makes it on wildcards because they could have the double. But if Bournemouth lose to Man City, then I don't see many people going there, because ultimately you can see this with Spurs, and we'll talk about the Fulham game, that they start to prioritize the Europa League because that's your golden ticket to the Champions League next year. And Man United and Spurs are both one of the favourites to win that.
Worth noting, guys, that the next round of the FA Cup is before game week 30, but we don't think we'll know a huge amount about the fixture landscape in terms of doubles in 33 and blanks in 34, possibly not till after the 30 deadline, so ahead of game week 31. So for those on wildcard, if you want to know the outlook for 33 and 34, where we know there'll be doubles and blanks, you might want to try and save that wildcard to game week 31. It's going to be hard though, because so many teams will look at it and go, oh, I need to press that button now, and there's nothing wrong with that either. Praz, do you know when you're looking to wildcard? Have you booked in a slot, or are you flexible, or is 31 your window?
I will be trying for 31, but if international break brings injuries and other uncertainties, then I'm also okay to go in 30. Like, I think even though we may not have confirmed fixtures for the future, you may have, you know, you will know the FA Cup results, right? So you can take educated guesses. And I think you will still know that these particular teams have X number of games left in these number of weeks. So I will be targeting these teams. So it's not, and when you have a free hit left, you can even target those weeks where, you know, if they double in this week, I'll free hit around it and something like that. So I think it's absolutely fine, but I won't be pressing the button until the FA Cup weekend, because that's just how I think waiting till 31 could have its benefits.
Yeah, nice. And guys, if you're interested in the other obvious window for some, it's going to be really difficult to get a good team out in 33 and a good team out in 34, because the teams that double in 33 blank in 34. So many will look at a wild card window of 33 or 4 or a free hit in that window, but you're probably going to need to use a chip in 33 or 34. For me, I'll be wildcarding in 34, having just used my free hit in 29. Praz, let's talk about Arsenal-Chelsea. The Palmer news was a bit of a surprise because we knew he was unwell last week when he missed a penalty. Featured on the Thursday night game for Chelsea, came off the bench, so we all assumed everything was fine. And then out of nowhere, when managers really needed just those minutes points because they were struggling to field 11, didn't have anyone on the bench, Cole Palmer was ruled out. What do we know from Maresca and Chelsea?
Well, firstly, it was a big blow for those not on a free hit, because not everybody sold. I mean, some people did sell him to fund a Haaland move or something. So well done if you did that. But for people like me, we had no bench. I mean, I had Greaves coming on for a zero pointer for Palmer, which is such a shame when you're sort of going against like a Bruno for other people. Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. Maresca didn't say anything in the press conference. And later, actually, we found out that it was a slight injury on a Saturday, so basically post deadline. Obviously they played on a Sunday, that they, you know, he had an injury during yesterday's session. That's what he said. It was a very light session, so that's why I think it's not important, but he's probably going to miss England. Not probably, he is going to miss England, because Gibbs White has been called up instead. So it's one of those things where he missed the game. Incidentally, he also missed Arsenal away last season, so there's no correlation there, but that's just what it is. And look, hopefully he should be back, because Spurs at home in Game Week 30 is a fantastic fixture. Spurs are, as you saw from the Fulham game, they're pretty much checked out from the league. Like, they are not, you know, they don't think they will qualify for Europe. They're obviously safe from relegation or anything else. So it's one of those things where I think Chelsea versus Spurs should be a really nice, high-scoring 3-1 kind of game. And I'm really looking forward to having him back if he's fit.
Chelsea and Spurs always has goals. Yeah, I've got Palmer, Steele and Enzo ready and waiting there. And Jackson and Madueke could be back for Chelsea. We don't know. Yep. In terms of Arsenal, it was a good 1-0 Arsenal win. They're an elite defence, and Chelsea didn't cause them problems over the weekend. But it does feel like that Arsenal attack without Saka just is so far off it for what we're used to. you can't replace Saka. He's an elite FPL option. And I've got no doubt, as soon as he's back and available, one, Arteta will give him a ton of game time. I don't think he'll ease him back too slowly because Arteta doesn't tend to do that. But two, there's going to be a lot on wildcard and not on wildcard that are very interested in Bukayo Saka in their FPL teams.
Yes, and I think even Martinelli coming back made a big difference. Yeah. Like in this game, they were everything great that was coming from them was coming from Martinelli. I think, you know, Saka back, Martinelli back, even without Havertz, I think you're right that they may be back to what they were. However, the caveat was even before Saka, there were some murmurs about, you know, Arsenal attack, they're missing a striker. So yes, they'll be better, but would they be as attacking as some of the other teams you want to target? And the second thing with Arsenal we have to remember is the further they are in the league, the more they will focus on the Champions League. Now, they're not going to throw it away and basically rest all their players, but it's just a point of focus. You know, like some games, will they take it as seriously? You know, you're right about the past where Arteta hasn't managed Saka as well, but maybe he does now because he's coming back from injury. Maybe he keeps the Champions League games where Saka is needed much more than the league. We will see. We're still discovering it. I don't think Arsenal attackers are top of the agenda.
Mm, yeah, you're right. The priority will have to be the champs. Bournemouth-Brentford was one of those games which was set. We always knew both teams. I think many fancied both teams to score. And I was on free hit thinking, I can't touch a Bournemouth or a Brentford defender, but I definitely want the attackers. And I ended up with three. I had Mbeumo and then Semenyo and Cliver. It was difficult though, because out of nowhere, Brentford were just the better team. I didn't expect it. I thought Bournemouth would win this game. I thought Bournemouth would score 2-3 goals. Brentford always give you big chances. But it was the Mbeumo and Vissa show. And then for Bournemouth, it was neat and tidy for Semenyo, Cliver, Evan Nilsson, Tavernier, but just lacked a little bit of sharpness in front of goal, you could say, right?
Yeah, it was strange. Like, yeah, like you, I was also expecting a Bournemouth win. I mean, they have beaten the top three, Man City, yeah. Arsenal and Nottingham Forest at home. Forest, they beat 5-0 at home. So it was one of those things where people expected, you know, a maybe 3-1 or a 2-1 win, but for Bournemouth. So Bournemouth attackers were high on the agenda and they can also feel a bit disappointed with that, you know, Semenyo chance that he hit off the post. And I think, you know, Brentford are that kind of team where if on their day they can restrict the opponent to very few big chances and they themselves, you know, create a couple of big chances and that's it. They don't give away a lot. So, you know, great set piece. Bumo Wissa again, the duo we talked about from this team. And I think, look, Bournemouth is still a good team, especially if you weren't on a free hit and you bought those players because they have home to Ipswich. But with Bournemouth, I think another thing to remember is the same thing with that I said for Man City. They will play the City game in the FA Cup on a Sunday. Then they have Ipswich at home, which is basically slightly tougher. So whether that they rotate for that or not, we will see. But it's a good attack and a good team to back.
Yeah, exactly. The Cliver-Semenyo combo. Did you see the cross from Cliver? It was awesome. Pinpoint. Mm. Semenyo meets it square on his forehead. Hits the ball clean with his header, smacks against the bar, should score Semenyo from sort of 6-7 yards out. But I own Cliver and Semenyo for that. And I was like, oh my God, it would have been goal assist, but also probably bonus points, probably a 10-point-ish swing. So I was disappointed to see that, but elsewhere, I can't complain. Semenyo picked up another yellow. Yeah. That's 9 yellows now for Semenyo. I think it's game week 32, isn't it, which meets the threshold. So he's got to go well in the next couple of games or he gets a 2-game ban. So correct. One more yellow in the next couple of games and he picks up a 2-game suspension. So got to keep an eye on that, haven't we?
Yes, and it's that time of the year where every content creator will be reminding you how many yellow cards people are on. And you know, sometimes it works out and the player manages it, like Jackson did earlier, you know, when we were talking about the 5 yellows. But in other cases, it is frustrating, like Morgan Rogers missing out. I think it was home to Southampton, the game where he got suspended. So yeah, it's an important thing to work around. And Semenyo does have the tendency to get those odd yellow cards.
I'm likely shopping for a midfielder under 6.2 million this weekend 30. If I bring Haaland in as the plan, and then I need to buy a midfielder around 6.2. Now, Cliver is currently 6.2. I expect Haaland and Cliver will see a price rise before I can make that move. I will therefore be priced out of Cliver. And I'm not willing to go early on it because we don't know if Bournemouth will double or whatever. I always thought if I don't go Cliver, I'll probably just go Semenyo. I don't think I will be now. I think that's enough to put me off. I think that's enough to put me off and maybe shop for, you know, we've spoken about some of the Brighton mids or whoever.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I suggest everyone hold those transfers because one, we should know more about doubles, but definitely injuries and international break and all that jazz. Mate, Fulham 2, Tottenham 0. I mean, Spurs just are not showing up. That's a toxic dressing room at the minute. And Spurs feel like a defence we can also target. Fulham looked comfortable, and I think many thought that would be a bit of a home win.
Yeah, I mean, it shows that on a week where people were on free hit, I didn't see one team with a Spurs player because there's now rotation concerns because, you know, Son isn't starting every game because they're focusing on the Europa League. There's general concerns around the team. You know, it's not even injuries anymore because a lot of the players are back. So it's just a case of the team not functioning. There's a lot of pressure on Ange. So yeah, I think this was entirely predictable. This was the same fixture that happened last game week 29, if you remember, where Muniz scored again. So it's a little bit of a deja vu. But you know, Marco Silva's team are third for expected goals conceded this season. They're a very, very good defense. And no wonder Anthony Robinson has been very popular. He got another 7-pointer. Leno got an assist this week. So, you know, it's a team that is functioning very well. And Marco Silva's done a terrific job. Great season for them.
I'm disappointed I didn't even look at Robinson on free hit. I didn't even look at a Fulham defender, and I thought Fulham would be a low scoring Fulham win. I didn't back Robinson, and of course if I was looking for a Fulham defender it would have been him, but he's just so reliable and again gets one bonus but always close to two or three bonus. And Spurs, when I made my first draft for free hit 29 about a month ago, because I knew I was looking at it, I had Son in there. And as you say, no one on free hit went Son, and Son obviously didn't make the cut. I'd seen Spurs play in the last month and didn't go there. But yeah, really interesting that we can't even back a human Son in a free hit week where there's few big hitters out there. That just shows how poor Spurs have been of late. The other game to touch on from the weekend, Praz, was Everton 1, West Ham 1, and it was a pretty low-scoring board draw, that. Late goal from Everton, they deserved the draw. I think Everton was slightly stronger. But both these teams just feel like, in terms of FPL interest, yeah, we'll pick up some clean sheets from them, especially Everton, but I just don't feel like there's enough goal threat in either attack. Even Jared Bowen is brilliant. I don't know if I see enough in the team to back a Bowen at that price point.
Yeah, I think so separating the two things out. So for West Ham, I think Graham Potter has just basically said, we are going to fix the defense and then we will deal with the rest. So, you know, they restricted Everton to just 0.6 XG. They were close, obviously, had they not leveled in stoppage time, they were close to their third clean sheet in four matches. So Potter has basically said, let's fix the defense, then we'll deal with the rest. And then you don't want to be targeting a Bowen if that's the case, right? For Everton, I think their fixture run is turning into the most horrendous fixture run that anyone can have, which is basically they have Liverpool, Arsenal, Nottingham Forest, Man City and Chelsea as the next five fixtures, next five. And so it's just horrendous. So if you have a Pickford and you can basically play him for a couple of games, or you need to play him for a couple of games, fine, not the end of the world. Everyone else, you should be either selling or benching pretty soon.
Yeah, I mean, the beauty of Pickford is he might still get the save points out of nowhere. Surprise clean sheet can mean he's on for a 12-pointer. But yeah, I mean, I've got Mikalenko and Pickford, and I'm definitely going to be offloading one, if not both, as a matter of urgency. Worth noting with West Ham, you mentioned like that play, and of course, you'd expect like work on the defence first. Complete contrast, Potter's gone into a West Ham team that has been coached by Moyes for years, and he's got a completely different philosophy. Look at Moyes, goes into Everton, and it's a much better fit for a quick fix because they've been coached by Sean Dyche for years, and it's just a match made in heaven straight away. I think next season, once West Ham have had 6-12 months of Graham Potter, that'll be a very different attack. But for the run-in, I'm monitoring them closely because I think there's potential there, but I think it's going to take them a while to adapt to Potter ways.
Completely.
The final game we haven't touched on, Praz, was Wolves. Really, like, I think there was only five shots for Wolves and they somehow still managed to score two goals and win. Southampton are bad. Wolves weren't much better. But Strand Larsen, a few did punt there on free hit. He's showing to be a really good, solid finisher. And I think next season will get quite a lot of interest in terms of FPL, but also maybe a couple of clubs sniffing around him, because he's been very, very good this year.
Yeah, I mean, he outscored the other Norwegian. So, you know, he was the Norwegian star of the week. I think, look, there were concerns around how do Wolves cope without Cunha. And you can see that they did not create as many chances. You know, Cunha is the guy, he's the heartbeat of the team. But when it's Southampton, you will create some chances and you will get some goal output. And I think it was good for Stan Larsson to get at the end of those. Am I going to be looking to get him anytime soon? Not really, because I think, as you said, if you're only creating, you know, three or four chances against Southampton, then I'm not as bullish as when you start to face top 10 teams. So I think Wolves is a team that was fine to pick on a free hit, and even their defense, it was fine. But Ait Nouri isn't showing that same attacking threat that we used to see him have early part of the season. It's just one of those things where, you know, I think Wolves would be one of my early candidates for on the beach once they have a couple of more wins, or maybe even one.
Yeah, for sure. Mate, let's finish up on captaincy. I know game week 30 is 2 weeks away, but where are you at in terms of your initial thoughts? Because we mentioned earlier, it's going to be a real discussion point, and I think it's going to be a huge discussion point every week now for the run-in. Salah versus Everton, or a Man City forward, probably named Erling Haaland, but possibly if you don't have him, you have Marmoush, you could even consider. They've got Leicester at home. We've spoken about how Leicester are the team to target. Do you think you'll back Man City against Leicester with the armband?
Yes, I have my captaincy on Haaland at the moment. But like I said, it'll come down to the minutes they get. Like if Haaland's playing 120 minutes on a Sunday against Bournemouth in the FA Cup, then it slightly puts me off. Whereas Salah will get the weekend off after the international break. So it's not an easy answer. Palmer home to Spurs is a good option. Isak home to Brentford is a good option. So we're not short of options this week. But yeah, the default might be Salah. I'm quite keen to take him on with Haaland at home to Leicester.
Yeah, I'm the same. So international break coming up. So it's just time to relax a little bit now, right?
Exactly. I mean, there's players like very important players like Munoz, who's traveling all around the world. And there's a lot of players like this who are going to be traveling around the international break. And remember, for the first time ever, coming out of the international break isn't the FPL deadline. It's actually the FA Cup weekend. So you will get to see some of these players over the weekend. You'll get to see, you know, the results of the FA Cup, who's going through, who's there for blanking in Game Week 34. And so there's so much information to come that, like Gianni said earlier, hold your transfers, sort of check out from FPL a little bit over the next couple of weeks and come back fresh.
Yeah, and Kelly and Jules and Sam will be back on Thursday reviewing the season. They'll be talking about all things wildcard. So many have hit that button ahead of game week 30, and they'll be looking at the players to invest in.
And if you haven't already, join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is Q7YCO0. Lovely to chat, Gianni. Hope you have a nice international break. I know you're moving houses and everything, so best of luck with all of that.
Oh, thank you, mate. Yeah, and looking forward to what will hopefully be a good run-in for us both. So yeah, we'll catch up soon. And next time we speak, I'll be in Italy. See you later, mate. Bye-bye.
Take care.